Open lines for you now. So, yes, here I am in Norfolk. I came here from St. Louis. When I got on the plane at the St. Louis International Airport, Lambert Field, as we call it, Lambert Airport, a friend of mine, Mike Claiborne, who does sports on KTRS, our affiliate there, he was getting on the plane with his family. So that was kind of small because this was one of those little, tiny, little planes. I mean, where you have one seat on the left and two on the right. And if there's too many people up front, they try to send you to the back in order to put the weight on the back of the plane. And I'm going, ah. Oh. But, you know, the plan was St. Louis to Norfolk. And I was going to wait for Tom, producer, who was coming from Los Angeles. He had a stop off and a plane change in Dallas. And then he was going to connect from Dallas and go straight to Norfolk. So I land and I'm waiting for Tommy. There's no Tommy. All of a sudden, my phone rings and it's Tom. He's in Memphis, Tennessee, waiting to take off. They had to make an emergency landing because a woman's, I guess, father had died. And she found out about it moments before that flight from Dallas to Norfolk. And she got on the plane and then lost it. Absolutely lost it. Doctors were on the plane. They were flying on the planes. I mean, the place, according to Tom, was just a mess. And so they had to land. They had to get her off the plane. Blood pressure, 190 over 110. I mean, that is a human ticking bomb. And so they got her off the plane, and Tom rolled in 2 hours later than he was expected. But here we are on the air with you. We've got open lines, so get ready in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Boy, Ed McMahon, what a class act he is, isn't he? Well, let's go to the phones. We've got open lines, and so let us go to you, wherever you may be. Hi there. Welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Yes, hi, George. This is Tamara calling from Cynthiana, Kentucky, and I've just been real upset about all the news about the cold medications and how terrible they are from the children six and under and how many deaths have been caused by it. But it just suddenly occurred to me when I heard that again on the radio news on the ride home tonight. And I believe that if you and all your wonderful people could look into this, that we might all be terribly shocked on how much further damage this has caused. And I think personally that it's directly related to the increase in autism in our children, because I've done my own research on autism, and most of the time when they actually start to detect it in our children, it's around the age of 6 and 7 years old. And I just think that this runs a lot deeper in what the terrible side effects have been with these medications.
Well, you know, Tamara, follow the money, because billions of dollars have been made by the companies that have manufactured this junk.
I almost feel like enough attention by Oprah and all the people in the media, thank God that the media has done something wonderful, but I believe all the attention that they are bringing this out into all the American people, and there's been such an emotional uproar on the subject that I believe that this is the answer for it. And I think, you know, whoever's responsible for bringing this out, I think that maybe they don't even want us to even know there's a connection between, you know, the bad cold medications and autism. And I wish that you could bring all your powers that be, because I know you have a lot of them, and there could be an in-depth investigation, and then I'm a medicinal herbalist, and we never gave our kids any of that crap on the counters that you can buy. And we always use Mother Earth and her medicine, and our children are very healthy. We're using it for our grandson now, and I think something needs to be done, because I believe there is a connection.
Well, I tell you, I hear you, Tamara. And when we were raising our children, we would wait till the very last moment before we would try to give them anything like that. And it's unfortunate because it's an emotional issue. If you're a parent and you've had a kid at home and they're sick and their temperature's rising and it gets to the 104 level and that starts creeping up into that danger level, that zone, you start to really panic and worry. And so you reach for that special medicine, and it's unfortunate. It really is that so much money has to be made and nobody else cares. Well, you're right. You're right on. Let's go next to our first-time caller line. You are on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yeah.
It's David in Northridge.
Oh, hi, David.
Hi. I was just wondering, no one's been talking about Steve Fawcett.
Well, we talk about him twice a week. But the major, the rest of the media, they have forgotten him.
Well, I'm wondering if he was abducted by UFOs or
no.
by the government.
Here are several other theories I've heard. That he just decided to check out. He was tired of all, you know, whatever was going on in his life. I don't think that's the case. Was he abducted by UFOs? He was in a strange area. Who knows? Area 51, who knows? I mean, everybody's got a theory. That's one of the reasons why, David, I would hope that they could find the wreckage, if there is any, and him, so we can at least put an end to all these rumors over what has happened to him. We should get an update sometime next week from Ed Dames. As he attempts to get his remote viewing crew into a very small area to find Steve Fawcett. But that's the latest. That's all I've got. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Where are you calling from? Hi.
Hi, George. William in Chicago.
Hey, William. What's up?
A couple things. Conspiracy and a theory. Conspiracy, the first one. It's not in the news now. It's been shown. Illegal alien from Mexico that crossed our border 76 times with a tuberculosis bacilli.
Yeah, the same kind that the guy from Atlanta had. Yeah.
That happened. The last time that happened was over April and May of this year. If you'll think back, what was the big debate going on in Congress right then? The immigration debate. If that would have came out, it would have blown it wide open. Those people were told to be quiet. I guarantee it.
Yep.
Next, the theory. All these superbugs that are coming around right now. Okay, all the illegals aren't going through Ellis Island and getting checked out, making sure that they got their proper immunizations and everything up like the rest of us, you know, American citizens and people that immigrate legally. I have a theory that they're coming up here, bringing this stuff, and then using our hospitals for their primary care physicians, and then the doctors get it, gets on the tables and utensils, and gets spread around to everyone.
You know what? You might be right. It's a theory you can't shoot down. The hospital situation with this staph infection has been outrageous. You go in with one problem, and you come out with a worse one. Let's go east to the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Your turn. Hi there.
Hey, George. It's Dave in New Jersey. I got a UFO story
Dave.
For you.
All right.
I'm sitting. This is going to sound crazy. I'm sitting in the parking lot of a fried chicken place. And I'm sitting in my car eating my food, and in the parking lot, about 20 feet away from me, hovering about 5 feet off the ground, were two small objects. I said it's a UFO story, but it's not a big one. Everybody thinks, you know, big flying saucers.
Yeah.
This is two small objects that looked like, you know, an iron on an old-fashioned ironing board.
Yeah, okay. Had that kind of look and shape to it.
Yeah, upside down, both with a light in front, and both of them had what looked like some sort of string, or I guess you would call it a tail, hanging down and not touching the ground, but hovering over it.
You sure they weren't balloons?
No, they weren't balloons. I had a pretty good look at them, and I was watching them, and they silently... They were both hovering over the ground about the same height, and both silently and looking very deliberately, moving across the parking lot and went off into the woods. And that was the end of my love for fried chicken.
Now let me ask you a question about this.
Sure.
Was it skinless or skin chicken you were eating?
Well, it was the spicy, but I'm telling you, they were, I don't know what they were. And to me, you know, the funny thing was there was a cat, because, you know, cats hang around restaurants in the parking lot.
Oh, they're looking for the leftovers.
Yeah, exactly. And normally when there's a string or something long that's dangling, you know the cat's going to go after it and start messing with it.
Yeah.
And this cat did nothing. And it hovered, they hovered silently, slowly across the parking lot, went into the woods, and I just left.
All right, that's weird. But you know what, to me, it sounds like some kind of promotional balloons that may have floated away from someplace, especially when you mention the string. That, to me, is the catch. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're up on Coast to Coast. Where are you calling from?
This is Neil, Vancouver, Washington.
Hey, Neil, what's on your mind?
Well, I have a UFO story from, I honestly don't remember, but probably about 95 or 96.
All right, so and it's been around for a while. What was it?
Anyways, I got home from a friend's house. I was living with my parents at the time. And anyways, there was a extreme vibration in the air. I mean, you could feel it. You could hear it. It was a, I don't know how else to describe it. But I looked up, and it was a clear night, and the stars were disappearing slowly from the left to right. And I got really scared. I always thought that I could handle UFOs.
What were you afraid of?
I don't know. It was so overwhelming. It was so overwhelming. I mean, it was my whole body vibrated. I could hear this humming in my ears.
You know, maybe it's possible that when we are confronted with the possibility of life out there, and this is unusual and this is strange, maybe the body or the human psyche, it does something to us. I've not been in that position. I've not seen a UFO. I've not seen Bigfoot running across a road. But maybe that would happen to me if I saw something like that. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the show. Hi there. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, take it away.
Hey, George. This is Heathen up in Marlboro, Maryland. One thing I want to say to you is just want to congratulate you on the job you do. It's just absolutely fantastic. And, you know, I can only hope. In fact, you know, since you're down in Norfolk for this conference, you know, I was wondering if you could maybe push the revival of the old storyline radio programs, you know, the old Marlowe, Dick Tracy. And
those were classics.
Oh, they were absolutely fantastic. There was nothing like crawling into bed at night and turning the radio on and listening to some of these programs. There's nothing that compares to it.
You have, though, given me an idea for a show, and that might be to do a complete show on some of these.
No, it's funny that you should mention it, because I was going to mention that to you. If there's some way that you could do a show that would address that issue.
Yeah, we'll get some of the clips of the old shows, and I mean, I'd love to hear the guy go, "Only the shadow knows," and then you know.
The characters, your imagination would just absolutely go wild when you would hear these things, you know, and there's nothing that compares to it these days.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
We'll do it.
Listen, the thing I was actually calling about is I wanted to get your feeling about the superbugs that are floating around being a form of biological warfare.
You know, that's also a distinct possibility.
I'm a believer that what's ultimately going to bring this country down, if anything, is not so much nukes, but economic devastation. You know, and that's where these things, that's where these superbugs are ultimately going to bring us to our knees.
Well, and panic. Let me ask you this. If you were a parent and you knew that some kid in the school had a staph infection, and maybe not died, but had it, would you send your kid to that school?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And, you know, I work in the health field, and, you know, I see it every day in the hospital, so I can imagine what goes on in the public schools. But it's, you know, the fact that this stuff is spreading to the extent it is just a matter of hygiene.
No, there's no doubt about that. And you, your thoughts about biological, very possible. Very, very possible. I doubt that, but it's possible. Let's go next to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Welcome to the program. Hi there.
Yeah, have you heard about the ZAP-X Auto? All-new technological brakes on electric car. Takes 3 minutes, they claim, to charge it. 3,500-mile range. Top speed supposed to be 155.
How many batteries would it take?
I don't know. Less battery, I think. Couple. I don't know.
And what's it called?
Huh?
What was it called? ZAP-X.
You know that ZAP World?
Okay, I'll check it out.
.org, that ZAPworld.org.
I will check it out. And let's move on. Let's go to East of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Hey.
Erica, I'm calling from Jacksonville.
Hey, Erica, what's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to, you know, the other night when you had the lady on about the cancer and stuff of that nature, and she wanted to find out some way that she could build up her immune system.
Yes.
And I'm, you know, kind of, I do crystal healings and that stuff, kind of nature thing.
Okay.
And I wanted to tell her there was a, it's called lapis lazuli. It's an old stone, you know, like from the, it actually comes from Egypt in the Middle East area.
Lapis lazuli?
Lazuli. It's L-A-P-I-S-L-A-Z-U-L-I.
What does this stone look like?
Well, it's it can be polished or it can be raw. It's blue, has like veins in it. But you, it actually will it cleanses the organs and the bone marrow, which is something that's very important when you have cancer. And it purifies the blood and it boosts the immune system. And you have to make a gem essence with it.
What makes it work? If it
well,
does work.
They, crystals actually have energy for everything. They, there's so many of them. And, of course, they've been, you know, been on the earth as long as the earth has been made. And they are created by the water and stuff and, you know, seeps into the earth. And then it creates the stone and then they take them out. It's a gem essence, actually. I mean, this one is actually a gem that they put in jewelry. But well, a gem essence is what you do is actually you put it in a crystal jar and you put the stone in some cleansed water like distilled and you leave it in the sunlight for 12 hours and this makes a gem elixir and tincture and then you take, you know, a dosage of it every day.
You sound like you're almost like a chemist for crying out loud. That's pretty good. Okay, I'll look into that too. This was a half hour of information. We've got some open line calls coming up in just a moment. By the way, how many of you have ever had the feeling that you were falling in your dreams? Did you ever hit? That's the question I want to ask you. Did you ever hit the ground? I don't think anybody ever has, or you wouldn't be here to call. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Noy. Just got a very strange email from Ken Johnston, who was with us during the shuttle disaster back in 2003. And he was quoted in Richard C. Hoagland's book, Dark Mission. And Ken, if you hear this, because I just got your email, call Tom, because I'd like to put you on the air very briefly and talk with you about that situation tonight. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George. Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear, sir.
Good. George, this is Charles. I'm in Arlington.
Okay, not too far.
Not so far, that's right. Calling to ask your opinion about something upcoming with regard to Hillary. A couple of years ago, George, I heard you do an interview with Dr. Stephen Greer.
Yes.
It was quite an excellent interview. And as a result of that, I got a couple of his books. One of them, I think, was Hidden Knowledge, Forbidden Truth.
Yep.
In which he gives a very believable account of briefing Bill and Hillary when Bill was first in the White House on his work with UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
And according to his account, both Bill and Hillary were quite enthusiastic about his findings and actually planned to make them public. that didn't happen.
No, they turned John Podesta loose to try to get some information, and nothing ever came of it.
Right. What I'm curious about is whether or not Hillary, when I'm presuming she will be in the White House next, whether she might tell us that we have visitors, which I think we do. Do you think that's a possibility in today's world, or is it not?
The good question. Let's not presume she'll get in the White House, but you never know. But I don't think she'll say anything about it now, because it's unfortunately an election killer if a presidential candidate starts talking about that in a non-serious way.
Absolutely. Of course.
They'll blow them away. But I'd love to see a candidate say, folks, I want you to know something. We have this technology. This is how it happened. I'd love to hear that. But let's assume for a moment she is elected. Would she come forward and tell us? I don't think so. I think these politicians somehow get told something that scares the living daylight out of them, and they decide to clam up.
That's what Stephen Greer says.
Yep. I don't think they're threatened. I just think the message is so bad and frightening, they can't tell us.
Well, I hope you're wrong.
I know. I hope I am, too. But my gut tells me that. What does your gut tell you?
Well, my gut tells me that she's going to reveal it. I think that it's becoming increasingly difficult to not reveal it. And I think you're part of that, by the way, George.
No, I would.
Yeah.
You don't believe it? You don't think I would?
I think you would. No, I think you're part of the movement toward having to tell. I think you're...
I would.
Giving us information that I think is clear and convincing.
And understand, nobody has told us what to release. Everything we uncover is through our guests and our sources.
Exactly. And one other thing, George, I have seen UFOs on one occasion. It lasted about a 20-minute sighting, unambiguous, crystal clear. And so for me, the question is not, are they here? The question is, why are we not finding out about it through media, through governments, through authoritative voices?
But you will find, though, that this year, I think, was the best year for media coverage of UFO cases, from the Chicago O'Hare one to things in Mexico to whether these were drones in California that we've had on our website. This was the best year. I promised Jim Gilliland that we're going to go up to his ranch up there in sometime 2008 to take a look at all these UFOs. We're gonna check it out. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Seattle. My name's Justin.
Hey, Justin. Go ahead.
Yeah, you had a guest on a while back who mentioned some interesting creatures that lived in the subterranean caves called Reptoids.
John Rhodes.
Yes, John Rhodes. And I haven't heard an update on them in a while, and what we as the American public are supposed to do about controlling these intelligent critters.
Do you think there are critters down there?
You know, I don't know. It's kind of an ambiguous thing for me because I've seen some interesting things in caves and just not sure about, I don't know. I think it's plausible.
Well, you know, I was in one cave one time in Missouri, a deep one, besides the one where the studio is, which is only 8 feet deep. But I'm talking about a huge cavernous location, and it's eerie. I'm telling you, it is very eerie. Next up, first-time caller line, where are you calling from? You're on the air with us. Hi there. I think I lost you. Are you there?
Yes, this is John from San Antonio.
Okay, go ahead, John.
Actually, I had one of those dreams where you actually hit the ground.
You did hit the ground in the dream?
Yes, I did.
You're supposed to die, aren't you, when you hit?
Well, you know, as far as I heard, yeah, you're supposed to die, but... actually, it was kind of weird. We're visiting Hoover Dam. It was actually my father and I in my dream, and he was he was close to the edge and was taking pictures, and he slipped off. So I dove after him, and while he was falling, I could see him falling before me. And right when he hit the ground, he turned into a gold cross. Bing, bing, bing. And you can hear like the metal of a gold cross, or the gold cross hit the floor. And then right when I hit, I could feel myself turn into a cross. And I turned into a cross when I hit the floor. So.
But you probably died in your dream then, I think. If you turned into a cross.
It's kind of weird. I woke up right after that incident. I just rose out of bed, and I felt like I was kind of like not in my body anymore. So, you know, I've had one of those OBEs before.
Well, I got to tell you, John, you're one of the first people who has mentioned that they hit the bottom. International Line, welcome to the show. Where are you calling from?
Hi there. This is Jason from Calgary, Alberta.
Hello, Jason. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. I also have had dreams about hitting the ground, only it's not myself, it's other people.
You dream about other people hitting the ground?
I used to live in a high-rise apartment complex where there's four buildings that are circulated in a square.
Ah.
I have dreams about other people falling off of their balconies.
Oh, my God.
And I would
God.
See them hit the ground.
And were they pushed or jumped? What?
For the most part, they jumped. And then other people would come to the edge of the balcony to see them, and they would fall off the ground.
Oh, my God. I guess
it's a recurring dream, too.
This is a nightmare.
It is. It's almost as bad as myself hitting the ground.
Why are you dreaming this?
I wish I knew. I've always had that phobia about falling off of a balcony. But seeing other people do it, that's just weird.
Do you wake up in a cold sweat?
I wake up feeling pretty anxious, that's for sure.
I would guess so.
Yeah.
I mean,
normally I don't remember my dreams, but these ones are always crystal clear.
And they keep coming back.
Yeah, a couple times a month.
That's too much. Okay, Wildcard Line, you are on the air. Hi there.
Hi. My name's Susan, and I had a falling dream where I hit the ground. And I woke up, and I mean, I didn't wake up, but I was dreaming, and I realized I was falling all of a sudden. And I was falling through the air. And I put my arms out, like horizontal to the ground, and I started spinning. I put my ankles together, and I started spinning my feet around in a circle like a helicopter. And I landed on my feet.
You kind of floated like a butterfly, huh?
Well, I defied gravity by holding out my arms and spinning my feet.
And what made you do that?
It was natural impulse. I just realized that that's what I should do, and I did it, and I landed on my feet.
Well, and you're here to tell us about it, Susan. Thanks for the call. Wildcard Line, your turn. Hi there.
Hi, this is Gary in Loma Linda, California.
Hi, Gary.
I've had two dreams where I've fallen, but one after the other. It's two different times. I was in my 20s. I'm in my 50s now. But the first dream was when I fell off the cliff. I decided I wasn't going to. I in my dream, I thought, well, if I hit the ground, you're supposed to die. So I'm going to bounce. So I fell off the cliff and I bounced. And so then that was the end of the dream. And then I had another dream that I said, well, in the last dream, I learned I could bounce. So I fell off a cliff again, and then I bounced, and when I bounced, I kept myself horizontal. And then when I kept myself horizontal, I figured out I could fly. And then so I would take off. As long as I was horizontal, I could fly. As soon as I started to go up on an incline, I would drift back down onto my feet. So over the years in my dreams, I've perfected to fly, where now all I have to do is if I start to go up, I flap my hands, and now I can hover. As high in the air as I want. So I've had several dreams of flying around, and it all started from a bounce from falling off a cliff.
So many people have these kinds of dreams. It's almost time to bring in Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, George, it's Roy from
Roy.
Tulsa.
Sure.
Working the old midnight shift with a longtime listener. My question is, the other night you had a guest on, and she was talking about abductees. Now, nobody's ever answered this question. When these people come back, are they subject to our diseases, or are they just immune to them? You know, like cancer, all these different diseases that we have plague us. Are they cured of all that, or do they ever get it?
That's a pretty good question. You know what? I can't answer it other than nobody has ever told us that, you know, they are totally immune to diseases. But that's probably one of the best questions I've ever heard. I've got to talk with Bud Hopkins or somebody like that about that.
Well, yeah, because, you know, some of these cancer people probably out there waving at UFOs if they had to, you know. But I'm always curious about that.
Great question. Do abductees get illnesses and disease after they have been delivered back to us? Wildcard Line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Sir, it's Bill from Philadelphia.
Hey, how are you, Bill?
Good, sir. Bill, sort of question. What's going to happen in the South under severe drought conditions? What's going to happen to the people in our industries if a major city like Atlanta runs completely out of water?
And we're down to what, maybe 110 days of water supply left down there?
Yes, sir. They said 3 months. 3 months, they'll be completely dry of water. What's going to be the impact on our economy, and what's going to happen to those poor people down there if we can't ship water in to help them?
If you can't ship water in to help them, they're going to have to leave. Now, how are so many millions of people going to be able to do that? That's I don't know. Let's pray for rain. Maybe it's time for one of our mass consciousness experiments, huh?
Well, I think so, because we saw the devastation when you have too much water, like in Katrina. Now we're going to have the reverse where there's no water, and we're going to have millions of people have to be evacuated.
Okay, let's do this. And I know how this is not being done scientifically, and it's not being done with a lot of thought. And if we get accused of creating a deluge that floods people out, then so be it. But tonight, let's all concentrate in that Atlanta region, in that Georgia area, of lots of rain. And just keep thinking about that over the next hour or so, and let's see what happens. We've tried this before, and it's been pretty successful. Ken Johnston on the line with us. We do want to talk with him. Ken, how are you?
I'm doing just fine, George.
Good. Now, very briefly, tell everybody who you are.
Well, I guess I've been on the show several times. I go back quite a few years, even back when Art was there.
Yes.
I had been with NASA for about 17 years back, in, all the way through the Apollo program. And I'm the gentleman who had kept the secret stash of all of the photographs of the different missions and things. And then when Mr. Hoagland was looking for someone that had information, I happened to run into him. And as the story goes, they came over and checked out what I had and had been saving. And this is where they started discovering all the different things, anomalies and things on the lunar surface, and then a lot of the pictures. So been around with this for quite some time now.
Okay, now, you have been quoted in Richard's new book, Dark Mission.
I just got a copy of it myself and read it, and apparently he did quote me quite a lot, yes.
And he quotes you accurately?
Yes, he did. They did a very fine job. I was pleased that they did. They were very accurate.
Generally, what are some of the things, if you would paraphrase, what Richard and Mike Bearer wrote about you?
Well, one of the things they certainly covered well was the experience I had with Dr. Thornton Page, who is the chief scientist in charge of the astronomy portion of the Apollo program, where I was asked to show a film strip for he and a number of the other scientists that was taken by the command ship on Apollo 14 going around the backside of the moon, in which they were photographing a particular crater that had lights and domes down on the inside of it in the shaded part where the sun wasn't shining. And they even had me stop the camera and check a number of things and look at it, and they laughed and said, well, what do you think, guys? And they all chuckled like an inside joke, and they had me continue. And the next day, I checked the same film out, show it to the rest of the engineers, and unfortunately, it had been removed from the film strip and was no longer there. And that was just, you know, one of the instances that I actually participated in. And was unable to explain what had happened to them.
Okay, so everyone is saying, okay, so we know Ken Johnson. We know what he does. He's got credibility. Ken, what the heck has happened to you? What happened?
Well, I think the book must have hit a nerve, because I for the last 4 years, I've been working as a volunteer for both NASA and the Jet Propulsion Laboratory as a volunteer, what they call a solar system ambassador. Where, you know, we keep up with everything going on in the space program, what we're doing, and as well as what other countries are doing. And we give talks to the public in public forums, either in groups, you know, schools and organizations and things, and just basically as a spokesman, one-to-one to go out into the public and keep them aware of what's really going on in space. And so I've been having a good time doing that, and been involved in the X Cup prize last year, a few things like that. Well, today I got a phone call, and they were quite concerned about where my loyalties lied.
And who's they?
Representative from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory that was in charge.
Okay. And they must have they read the book, and weren't too happy.
Actually, they didn't read the book. It was a gentleman who used to be a good friend of mine back in NASA days, and that would be what in the world is his name? Having one of
well,
the,
huh? But what? So what's happened to you? What'd they do?
Oh, well, they made it real clear that I kind of had split loyalties there, and pressured me to the point where there was the only condition that was given was you ought to resign. And I said, well, probably will, and hung up. And from a telephone conversation, after thinking about it for quite some time, realized that, this person told me that, of course, there are people in NASA and in the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, you can find people that have all kinds of ideas and personal beliefs and things like that. Well, these are paid people, and if they have them in within their own organization and it's okay and they're paid, me being a non-paid employee, a volunteer, I think under the First Amendment, I have a right to free speech. And
I think you do. So basically, they are trying to get you out of there. And are you going to go kicking and screaming, Ken?
Well, I wasn't at first until I got to thinking about it and said, that's kind of ridiculous. I don't think I should, because I've done nothing wrong. I'm really told exactly what the truth is, that I have documentation and proof to back up everything I've said. So
Look, go kicking and screaming. Don't give up. Ken Johnson, you've been a good source for us here at Coast to Coast AM. And I guess that's what happened. Richard C. Hoagland's book, and it is a bestseller, almost. Dark Mission. Thanks, Ken. We're going to talk to you again later at depth. I'll be back in a moment. More open lines on Coast to Coast AM.